I'll start with a story, which, it's working. I'll start with a story which happened to me yesterday. I was in the Tachana Merkazit, and I'm walking to get to my bus, and a woman comes up to me, and she says, "Slicha, afshar l'shol she'ela?" And I said, "Ken." She said, "Mi achat ad 12, eich hayita magdir et ramat ha'anglit shelcha?" And I look at her, and she's wearing this Wall Street Institute kind of thing, and you know what I'm saying? So look at her and I say, "I think I'd give me a 12. And she says, "Have a nice day." And I was flattered because, you know, I don't know if she asks everyone, but like I was flattered that she thought I was Israeli, you know? Like, you know, but it highlighted to me this idea, this notion, this challenge that we have of being strangers in our own land as olim, and some of us are feeling it more acutely than others, if you know what I mean. That and just sometimes you feel this sort of alienation that you know, on the one hand we're here, we've chosen to be here, and we know we belong here, and you know we're wanted here, but on the other hand, you're just different. And so I wanted to sort of explore that tension between belonging and differentness, specifically in the way that the Torah describes Moshe. And it's definitely obviously a different feeling, but maybe our experiences will give us a little bit of appreciation for the way the Torah describes what he was going through. So before we begin, we're gonna begin at Perek Aleph Pasuk Chaf Bet, the last pasuk of Perek Aleph, okay? Because in order to really get a sense of what's going on, we have to understand the depth of or the severity of the situation. Wanna come around or you're good? Okay, great. Says the Torah, "Vayitzav Paro." So we all know we know the story basically of Shemot. Okay, we know the story of the Miyaldot. These Ananas, the Shifra and Pua. We don't know who they are. We think they're Yocheved and Miriam. They refused to brutally murder Jewish children as they're being born, which is a good thing. Okay. So what does Paro do in desperation? "Vayitzav Paro lechol amo lemor." Kol haben hayilod hayora tashlichuhu, lechol habat techayun. So Paro becomes desperate, and he says, "Lechol amo," okay, to his entire nation. Meaning, used to be, I guess you would think that there's like policemen, you know, there's the baby police, and they're in charge of making sure that the decrees are fulfilled, are kept. But now you have even stronger, like he says to everyone, saying, you know, if you encounter a Jewish child, Jewish boy, throw him in the river. Like it's just what
a baby or just any boy?
Kol haben hayilod, any newborn Jewish from now on.
Not just Jewish ancestors.
Right. Well, interesting. Rashi, very good. Rashi notes. Yehuda says l'chol amo, right? His entire people. So Rashi says the question is, Ya'el, is vayisav paro l'chol amo? Is it regarding his entire people, or is he telling them to fulfill the decree? You understand what I'm saying? I mean, are they the victims of the decree, or are they the enforcers of the decree? Or both? Well, it's hard to believe that they would be both the enforcers and the victims. That the Egyptians would kill their own people? Yeah, you think so?
The king tells you to do it. That's the height of his cruelty.
To his own people.
Yeah.
I don't think
there'll
be
a rebellion.
To his own people.
But all sacrificing like a firstborn.
What's that?
And when they used to sacrifice their firstborn or whatever.
So right, he's the god.
Any new child born.
That's
still
bad enough.
Why would it make sense for him to make that decree on his own?
Ah, Rashi. Says Rashi. Av Alehem Gazar. Rashi says he decreed on his own people. Yom Shenolad Moshe Amrulo Itz Diginav. His sorcerers told him. Okay, so apparently Rashi, it makes sense because he didn't do it indefinitely. It was for a period of time. So he knew for the following period of time, things are bad. Hayom nolad Moshi'an. So today, their Savior will be born. Ve'en anu yodim im mimitzvayim im Yisrael. So the sorcerers say, we know this child is going to be born, but we don't know if he's going to be Egyptian or if he's going to be Israelite. Which is interesting, as we're going to see. We don't know because, like, you know, it's like, you know, Harry Potter, like you can see the future, but you don't see details, you see sort of glimpses. So they see this glimpse, you know, they see the glimpse of the future, but they can't tell, is this child Jewish or is he Egyptian? And I want to hold that idea in your head, because there's a vagueness about it, right? And the question is, why did they, like, were they wrong, or they were really right, you know, in their vision? Because there was a vagueness about it. Lefikach, therefore, oh, v'ro'inanu shesofo l'lakot b'mayim. We see that he's going to be, at the end, his downfall will be in the water. Now, what was Moshe's ultimate downfall with water? Right, struck the rock, okay? Therefore, the Fika Gazar Oto Hayom Af Alamitzrim. Wasn't like this open-ended, and meaning according to Pshat, Pyro said, from now on, I want you to kill all Jewish boys. Because if we're really afraid of the Jews overtaking us population-wise, the way to kill them, the way to do that is a little population weeding. It was an open-ended decree. But Rashi says, no, since Rashi has to say, wants to say that it's both Egyptians and the Jews, I don't think even a Pyro could tell his own people, you should indefinitely kill your own children, and that they would fulfill it. You know what I'm saying? I think that for one day, any child born on this day, they could take it. But indefinitely, because, you know, somebody else will do it to you, and you know, you'll have another child or whatever. But indefinitely, I don't think that they would have done it. So it's interesting, Rashi...
Yeah, according to Rashi, that the decree against the boys only lasted for one day.
That's what he says. Oto hayom.
But it doesn't...
Af al hamitzrim.
Oto hayom af al hamitzrim. But for the Jews, it lasted for longer.
Shneemar kol haben hayilod, v'lo ne'emar hayilod le'ivrim. But he says that's the way he describes it. Right.
Even he says that all the women stopped being with their husbands because they were afraid that they would have boys and they would just be killed. Anyway.
Listen, we're going to find a ton of midrashim that contradict each other in the facts. You know what I'm saying? Like. It's very difficult to know how old was Moshe when he came out. This midrash said this. This was for that. What kind of?
Watch the Prince of Egypt, then you're
right. What's that?
Watch the Prince of Egypt, then.
It's very interesting. You bring up the Prince of Egypt. We're gonna see. You know, there's a very interesting sequence. We're gonna see. I'll get to it in a second. Like the Prince of Egypt is very interesting in some ways, and it's also very confusing in other ways. You know, because I think I happen to think Prince of Egypt brings out some interesting ideas that you would not have thought about otherwise. It's a good lesson. Did you ever watch it with your students?
No, when did you ever see it?
Prince of Egypt?
Steven Spielberg consulted.
I can tell you this.
Right.
I was the assistant rabbi for the rabbi who was like the head of the RCA at the time, the Rabbinical Council of America. They flew him out for the Prince of Egypt. And he just, because they wanted to make sure that it was authentic, and you know, the rabbis watched it. He just got a kick out of the fact that when Moshe got married, right, they had a scene where Moshe was breaking the glass under the chuppah when he married. And I think they left that scene in, if I recall. They had to explain to them, chuppah, glass, no, right, you know what I'm saying? Because they use like classical Jewish, you know, symbols of that, you know. Yeah, a little out of place, but okay, what can you do? Okay, anyway, so, I mean, they were trying to get as accurate as they could, but, you know, in the end, it's a cartoon, you know, let's just remember, it's about entertaining the audience. Okay.
Edutainment.
Yeah, that's right. Instead of teaching our children Chumash, now we'll just show them the Prince of Egypt. Okay. Vayelech ish. Next pasuk. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi. Vayikach et bat Levi. Right. This is, I think, a good example, Mimi, of what you're talking about. Like, what happened in this situation? The Midrash struggles because, if as we know, right, Moshe is the third of three children. You have Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. How much older is Aaron than Moshe?
3 years,
according to Pshat, correct? Batahar Haisha Batelid Ben, and then this woman became pregnant. One second, let me get this straight. This man marries this woman, it's so nice, and they have a child. What are we forgetting?
She already has two other children.
Right, you know, like this. Oh yeah, we didn't mention she married like 5 years ago, and she had two other children, and now this is the third child. All of a sudden, like, she has this child. What's going on? So what does the Midrash have to do? The Midrash has to insert a story. Why are they all of a sudden getting married? So what does the Midrash say? Anybody know? Right, the famous Midrash saying, and it's a very powerful Midrash, a very, very powerful Midrash that says that Amram divorced his wife. Amram was the head of the Jewish community. He was from Levi, and that he said, I mean, the words of the Midrash, it says, Midrash says, Amar Amram, Lashav Anu Amelim. If they're going to kill our children, why are we doing this? Yeah.
But Rashi quotes this Midrash, so I'm going to agree with Mimi, saying that it can't be that Rashi is going to contradict himself. Maybe Midrashim would contradict each other, but Rashi wouldn't contradict itself. Therefore, I think you should read the original Rashi as Oto Hayom means immediately, not only for
Gazar Oto Hayom Afal Mishim. Only on that day was
it
eaten.
It doesn't say only for that day. On that day, immediately, as soon as he was informed, he was gozer on the Mitzrayim also.
Ooh, very good. So you mean
I
it wasn't only
that
a day? It wasn't Le'o Tawayam. It was from then on. Okay, very good. Oh, very good. Okay. I will. Very good. Okay. So let me just finish the Midrash. Amad v'garach et ishto. He stood up and he divorced his wife. Amdu kulam v'garshu et nishotem. And then they all also divorced their wives. Is this also in Rashi, I think? Right, it's alluded to in Rashi. Okay? So, Amrlo Bito. So his daughter. How old is Miriam, by the way? In if we go by the story, how old is Miriam?
Seven.
Wait, he's 3 years older than Moshe. How old is she?
3 years
older than him? You guessing?
I don't know.
How much older is Miriam than Moshe?
I thought Aaron was first and Miriam.
See, here's the interesting question, because Moshe died at 120, right? And they all died in the same year. So she lived to 127? Miriam died the same year as Moshe. They all died in the 40th year of the desert. Right? So how old was she when she died? Do we know? Anybody know? I don't know. She couldn't be 15, could she? Right. So Amra lo Bito. So his daughter said, Abba! Kasheg zerotcha yoter mishel paro. You're worse than Paro. Why? Because Paro was only gozer decreed on the boys, and you're on everybody. You're destroying. So it says, interestingly, so what did he do? Amad v'chzirat ishto, amdu kulam v'chzirat ishotehem. So he remarried, and now you see, v'yelech ish mi beit Levi, v'yikache bat Levi. So there's this whole, like, a midrashic sub-story that's behind the scenes that you don't really see. What's the pshat? That's the drash. What's the pshat of the pasuk? Right. Meaning, well, what about all the other children? Well, what's that? Correct. It's not relevant to this story. Right. It's also interesting. What is it in this pasuk? It's just interesting to note. What does the Torah not tell you in this story, in this pasuk? Their names. It's just very interesting. Like, a man married a woman, and they had a child. You know what I'm saying? It's very sort of vague. Why? Because it's about the birth of the child. It's not about the birth of the... It's not about the parents. It's not about their lineage. And almost sort of gives you this sense, what is the identity of the child? This is what I want to get at. What is the identity of this child?
Jew.
Right. From the house of Levi. Who are his parents? We don't know. Right. He's almost an orphan from birth, in a sense. You know, he doesn't have a name. His parents don't have names. This is very interesting to know. What's that?
Yeah.
Or his own schut. But I think we're getting that for a reason. Okay, as we're going to see. Okay? She became pregnant. She had a child. And she saw that he was good. And she hid him for 3 months. Just so you know, it's worthwhile to look later on, when you have time, that Teruah Toki Tov was all these fascinating midrashim about what does it mean that he was Tov. Right? That he was Nolad Mahul. Some say that he literally shone. Right? There's all this interesting, how should we say this, tension between the natural birth of Moshe and the miraculous birth of Moshe. Like, to what degree was Moshe naturally born? You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of interesting things. Some say that even that Moshe was, that he spoke when he was born, that he was an adult and he was born, almost in a sense. There's an interesting midrashim about it. That Moshe was different, that he was born different.
Even when it says the mother saw a child and she saw he was good.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, every mother hopefully looks at a chimp.
I, you know, to me that doesn't sound like a...
like a big deal?
Most moms, you have a newborn baby, you see it's good, you don't want it to be killed. I mean, I don't know, to me it's...
Maybe she thought he was viable.
Right, but what does it mean that she... I mean, exactly, so why would you say that she thought that she was good?
Voracious, then Hashem sees things and sees that it's good. The light of Mashiach.
Nice. I didn't think of that. Okay. Probably, very nice, beautiful. Okay. Pasukim, v'lo yachla od hatzpino. She couldn't hide him anymore. Why can't she hide him anymore?
He's getting big.
All right, he's getting big. He's getting louder, probably. Now, according to the Midrash, just to, in case you don't know, Moshe was born premature, 6 months. And as you know, according to any child in the Midrash that's born at 6 months, even today, 6 months is like unheard of. But think about ancient Egypt. A child born in 6 months is not a viable child. Okay, but Moshe, of course, is different. And of course, the Egyptians were keeping tabs on when women got pregnant. So they wouldn't come around until... you know, until 9 months, and that's what the Midrash says. 9 months came around, and she couldn't hide him anymore. Vatikach lo tevat gomeh, vatachmera bachimar ubezafet. She made a teva of gomeh of... Anybody help me here? What do you got? Gomeh? Arlo, what do you have?
Wicker.
Okay. And she vatachmera bachimar ubezafet. Chemar is... Zafet is pitch. What's chemar?
Clay.
Clay and pitch. So it's very interesting. So Rashi says, why clay and pitch? Right? Pitch smells bad. Pitch is like tar. Tar is obviously because she wanted it to be waterproof, which makes sense. She's going to put it in the water. Then the Midrash said, well, why did she put it... why did she do the clay on the inside? Okay? Because if she wouldn't want to put pitch on the inside, Rashi says, very interestingly, why did he say... B'chemar b'zavet, zavet mibachut, titi mibifnim... Kedesh lo yariach otot sadik reach rashel zefet, because she knew that her son was a tzaddiko, like, you know, and she knew, you know, like, by the way, what did she call him?
We don't know.
What?
Tovia.
Tovia, that's what the Midrash says. We don't know. Can you imagine, like, we have this child, we have no idea what his mother called him for the 3 months that she raised him. She named him something, but his name, his real name, isn't known to us. There's something mysterious about that, in a sense. Something hidden. Okay? Why would you not cover it with pitch on the inside? Okay, let's assume Rashi is very nice, beautiful, a little tzaddikal, you know what I'm saying? Don't want him to smell that thing. But she's an Israelite woman in Egypt. What does she care if there's pitch on the inside or pitch on the outside?
Because she'll get caught.
She'll get... But it's pitch on the outside. It smells. She didn't want it to smell. It clearly did not want it to smell on the inside.
It's like waterproof from the outside.
What, aside from the fact that she was worried about this child smelling the pitch. Okay. Would you care about your child smelling the pitch?
The baby to smell when it was found.
Oh. Correct. Anybody ever open like a cedar closet and like you open it and it's like, ah. You know what I'm saying? You ever open something that stinks and you open it and it's like... Whoa. What? No. I'm not going there, okay. You know what I'm saying? So this is the question. What does she expect to happen?
Somebody would find it.
Right. She wants someone to find it. We're going to talk about this in a second. Who does she want to find it? And what happens when you open this thing and the first thing you smell is
tar.
Right, keep going. So instead, she's very careful. She just pitch on the outside, but clay on the inside. So when you open it, all you see is what you get. You don't get a surprise. Okay? She put the child inside. What is suf?
Reeds.
Reeds. Everybody translates the Yam Suf as Red Sea. It's not true. It's the reed sea. Okay? She placed it in the reeds at the edge of the Nile. This is what I wanted to get to at the beginning credits of Prince of Egypt. Right? You know, like when she puts it in the Nile, what happens to the little basket? Anybody know? Nobody remembers? I found this a very...
It flows.
What? It flows, but the whole credits is about like, you know, these animals try to eat it, and it's like about this whole sort of like miraculous trip that this basket has in order to end up near Bat Paro. But let's look a little more carefully. She places it in the reeds. When you place a basket in the reeds, think about the water when the reeds are sticking out, and you put the basket in the water in the reeds, what's going to happen to it? It's not going anywhere. It's intentionally placed in the reeds. Right? So then the question is, what happens? Vateitzav achoto merachok ledeyam ayaselo. Right? Place the basket in the reeds, and then withdraw, and then watch. It's not, so you are, I always, and I never noticed this until this year, I always had this vision that she placed it in the water, and that it sort of like float along the water, and Miriam is kind of following along to see what happens. That's not, it's clearly not what happened. She placed it in the souf, in the water, left it in the reeds, withdrew, and said, listen, what happens? Okay, where did she go? Pasuk Hey. Vatered bat paro lechotz al hayor, v'na'arotea hochot ayad hayor, vatered tateva betoch hasuf. Let's think for a second. Right, did it move? Did it go anywhere?
No.
No, it's right there. So where did she, Miriam, or whatever, where did the mother place the basket?
Where she knew Bad Paro.
Exactly, right where she knew Bad Paro would bathe. So it wasn't like this sort of random kind of thing. It was very intentional. Mm-hmm. Meaning, and by the way, you just feel the anguish and the pain of this poor mother, you know, the beautiful, beautiful child. You can't keep him anymore, and out of desperation, you place it in this place and you just hope for the best. You know, what is else, you know...
Sounds like it's more than hoping for the best.
Right.
It's planning for the best.
Planning, well... What's the moment of truth?
The problem is that knowing that Bat Paro is going to take the baby home.
Correct.
And that Paro is going to let her, for some reason, keep this baby.
Correct. Correct, right. That's the challenge. But just... It wasn't... It was definitely planned. There was an architecture there that she built the teva in a certain way. She placed it in a certain way. And obviously, this also implies that there is some intimate knowledge of, A, not only where Bat Paro bathes. I don't think anybody... The ability... We're going to see that she had access to Bat Paro. Right? And she obviously knew her in some way as well.
Does the word teva mean a basket, or it's the same like Noah?
It's like an ark.
It's a box.
Yeah. What?
Teva is a box.
Teva is a... In this context, it means a floating thing, whatever. Don't you think?
Floating box.
I have in mind like a little baskety thing. I don't know. It's a box. Okay. And of course, the Midrasso sees it in a different way, right? It says, interestingly, on the words, Vatishlach et amata vatikacheha. What's an ama? To send her. Ama means maidservant. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, of course, amata. Rashi says, pshat is, and shivchata. Verabotenu darshu lashon yad. Right? And our rabbis, right, they were darshaning the lashon language of a hand. So this is always, I used to give riddles in my shul. So so the riddle for Parshat Shemot one year was, which member of the Incredibles appears in Parshat Shemot? And the answer, of course, is? Mrs. Incredible. Right? Why? We've all seen Incredibles. You haven't seen Incredibles?
Mr. Gadget.
What?
It's Gadget.
You don't. Well, we'll lend it to you. It's very, very important.
I want to see Prince of Egypt first.
Yeah, really. This woman, her superpower was she could stretch her hand out. So that's exactly what the Midrash says. That because Lashon Yad, that she extended her hand. It says Ed Yadav Nishtar Beba Amata Amot Harbe. Her hand like extended all the way out and reached out and grabbed. That there was this idea, obviously, as we're going to see, that the salvation of Moshe, the saving of this child, is not a natural thing. That clearly, as we're going to see, there's Yad Hashem involved in ensuring that this child is saved in this way and is raised in this way. Right? That, you know, it doesn't make sense. The thing that makes the least sense about all this is that the daughter of Paro would take this child into this house.
Was
Bacha
converting in the water? Was that not true?
We're going to get to that too. Wait to that. Wait for a second with that. Okay.
Why does the Midrash need to say that? Why does the Midrash need to go? Like, what does it
achieve?
You know what I mean? Like, what does it achieve?
Something. Say that she was Elastigirl? You mean?
Yeah. Like other Midrash explains that it makes perfect sense the way it is. She's a princess. She sees something floating in the water, and she says to her maidservant, go get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why does the Midrash...
Good, so you answered the question. What is the Midrash doing to the story?
Making it more of a nascent.
Correct. Exactly. Meaning the Midrash needs to understand, the Chazal are trying to explain to you, that there's Yad Hashem in every aspect of this story, that the salvation of the Jewish people, the birth of Moshe is Tov, he's unusual, he's born early. You know what I'm saying? And there's Hashpa'ah Elokit in his birth, in the placing in the water, in his salvation from the water. Every step along the way, the Midrash adds in these details about his salvation. Okay? Pasuk Vav, I'll give you another one in a second. But Yiftach Vatir Ehu Et Hayelet, she opens it up and she doesn't get the blast of pitch, but rather she sees a child. V'hine na'ar boche. Right, what's the problem in the Lashon?
Na'ar.
What's a na'ar?
Young man.
What's boche, right? See, remember I told you about Moshe? Okay? The Midrash says, very interesting, why does it say na'ar boche? So the Ramban says, give me a break, it means a little child. Okay? But he says, you can say, use the word na'ar to mean a little child. But the Midrash says, very interesting, v'chinar haya? Hello, ben shloshah chadashim haya, he was 3 months old. Ela afal pi sheyalad haya, even though he was a child, lo haya boche klal, uminago kinar. Right? He was a very austere, serene 3 month old. He acted like a teenager, although then if you act like a teenager, you know what I mean? Where's my cell phone?
They cry much more when they're
teenagers. Okay. Listen to what Midrash says, and this is very important. Ba Gavriel, the Hikal Moshe. Who is Gavriel?
He's
the angel of Yad Hashem. Gavriel, when you see Gavriel, Gavriel is the angel of the hand of God in the world. What did Gavriel do? He smacked Moshe. What did Moshe start to do? Hey, what the heck? He started crying. Kadesh Yivkeh. Right? You don't want some, what do you have? He's a child. He looks fine to me, send him off. No. You want the child to cry. Okay, so, it's a nar boche. Vatachmolalav, and she had compassion on it. Vatomer, and she said, Miyaldei ha'ivrim zeh. It was obvious. Now, the Midrash says that he was mahul. But I don't think you need him to be mahul. You need him circumcised in order to know that he's a Jewish child.
Why not?
I see what you're saying. Meaning, if you accept the Midrash that it was all of them, then you have to say that she knew that he was mahul.
Or some other identifying characteristic.
Right. According to the Charlton Heston version, didn't he have that strip of cloth from the Hebrew strip of cloth? From the Ten Commandments? Am I the only one that saw the Ten Commandments? In the film. What? Right, in the film, he had the Hebrew, colors or something.
But you were saying before, you were hinting to the fact that maybe Yocheved knew Bat Paro.
Ah.
So it could be that Bat Paro, that there was some family resemblance. Maybe she knew that this would be Yocheved's child.
I think it was just obvious, personally. I mean, the shot is obvious. Like, who would do this? What?
Oh, it was obvious, not by how he looked.
Right. But who would do this? Out of, you know what I'm saying? I mean, assuming... I think the simple shot is that Paro insisted that Jewish boys be killed and not Egyptian children. Mm-hmm. Okay? And the Jews, out of desperation, would do ridiculous things to try to save their children, as we all know. You have to try to put our vision of Egypt more in tune with what we know about the Holocaust. And think about what would a Jewish mother do to try to save her children in the Holocaust, and then transmit that or transpose that. What would you do? You would, put your child in a basket and send him on his way. How many children would Jewish parents
give to non-Jews just to save them?
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Just put them in, give them away because I can't save them. I can't do anything. One of our members from Hartford. He was a child. His parents' father was a rabbi in a community in Poland. And they gave him over to an orphanage, to a Christian orphanage, where he was raised for the Holocaust. And to the credit of the orphanage, they sent him away. They gave him back afterwards. And he was sent to America. And he became,
loved it, give them
back. Allah did not. Allah did not.
Mm-hmm. Foxman, who's head of the
ADL.
Right.
So he was also, he was hidden in the monastery. And he talks about, he writes in his biography, that the anger that he felt when he found out he was Jewish, because here he had been, you know, in a typical monastery where, like, Jews are bad, Jews are bad.
Right.
And how at night, when he was first sent back to his family, he would, like, secretly pray to Jesus.
But in other monasteries, it was just the opposite. Mm-hmm. There were priests who did all they could for these children, that they knew that they were Jewish.
Right.
And they even organized a seder for them in hiding so that they could have it.
I want to, okay, so this is, by the way,
out of the topic.
This is, no, it's not. It's not out of the topic. This is exactly the topic. Because the topic is, what are you? You know what I'm saying? On the one hand, you have an Apoxman who thinks he's Christian, but he's really Jewish. And then you have a Jewish child being raised among Christians with a Jewish identity. Knowing that you're persecuted, knowing that you're hated. Raised by someone who's non-Jewish. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's very important for us to have a sophisticated, like, it's very easy in the sense when we all saw the Ten Commandments and you read the Humash and you, like, read it as a child, to try to avoid thinking about the in terms of the desperation of a parent. But if you think about, just think about, you know, Yocheved, you know, Moshe's mother. Well, you know, what would it take for us to do what she did to her child? And you begin to imagine.
Moshe as easily ended up a slave.
Moshe could have.
Yeah, she could have, but Paro could have found him and said, oh, you know, let me send him to a slave. Now we have another pair of hands around.
No, he wouldn't have. He would have
killed him.
The decree was in force. Jewish child? Goodbye. Okay.
Except that he was 3 months old already, so maybe they wouldn't have killed him.
Because he was already...
He wasn't a newborn.
I don't know. Interesting question.
So was there a whole workforce?
What's that?
That was grown up, a whole workforce of...
At some point they decided too many Jews. Cut it off. You know, it's enough. And that's what the Midrash says. That's what the Chumash says.
Then who's going to build their pyramids?
Well, we'll worry about it for a couple of years. We're going to thin them out. You know what I'm saying? You have to they looked at Jews like animals. Right? If the herd gets too big, you can't feed them all, or there's a negative, so what do? You kill the calves when they're young, and you cull the herd. And then when the time comes, then they'll reproduce. It's a very logical perspective if you think about it in that way.
And they did multiply prolifically.
Right. Right. They multiplied prolifically. It's too much. That's exactly what it says. It's too much. It becomes a danger. It's a potential threat to our well-being. So what do? When you have a potential threat? You handle it. You know? Throw them in the Nile. Weiter. You know, it's not so, unfortunately, not so difficult for us to imagine. Okay. Vatomer achoto, she says, she had compassion on him. So I think this is the most, to me, the key moment. That she had compassion on him. That here you have this woman who's the daughter of Paro. Listen to what the Midrash says. Very, very powerful, and I think so true. Ra'u na'aroteha. Her maidservant saw. Dekaba'it la'tzulei l'moshe. She wanted to save him. Amrula. Like her maidservant said. Gvirtenu, mistress. Minhago shel olam. Here's how it works in the real world. Melech basar v'adam gozer gzeira. Usually, the way it works is when a king makes a decree, even if everybody else ignores him, his family at least listens. It's not like you're some person. Right? You're the daughter of the king. You live in the house of Pharaoh. So when the maidservant said that, she put him down. Zaraka Kadosh Baruch Hu Rachmanut Beliba. Kadosh Baruch Hu placed an element of Rachmanut. That doesn't mean Vatachmol Alav V'Hichzira Etzlav. I don't want to take away from her. I don't want to say that it's external. She was obviously, to my understanding, a unique and an especially special person. Could you imagine the pressure of exactly that? Let me get this straight. Like she brings him home one day and she says, Dad, how was your day? I found this Jewish child and I saved him. Can you imagine? Like, what would...
You can relate to it now. Like, it's like the daughter of the president of Iran saving a Jew.
Supposedly they don't hate Jews, but okay, in theory, right? Well said. Like the daughter of the president of Iran, you know, going against, you know what I'm saying? No, like, you know, betraying him. What? Think about it.
She wouldn't last that long.
She wouldn't last?
He would behead her.
He would kill her.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I'm saying? So they picked the right person. They knew exactly who they were going to. Mm-hmm. You know? Plus, what also strikes me very much is compassion is a very personal thing. Like, it's very easy to be objective. It's much easier to be objective when you don't see the child in front of you. But she opened it up, and she sees the baby. And then all of a sudden, the decree of what it means to kill a child is in front of her. What's she really supposed to do when she sees this child? She's supposed to take him with her hands and drown him. And she can't do it. And she says, I'm going to save this child. And it's at that moment, meaning the Jewish people are saved at that moment. Now, that's the moment at which she has to decide, do I do the impossible but the right? Or do I do, you know, it's just another child and history continues. You know, and I think that, you know, nobody ever knows when they're at that moment, you know, but doing the hardest thing at the right moment really saved humanity. This woman, Batya Bat Paro, what do you want to say, is the person who in her marriage saved humanity. Many say that the reason why we call Moshe Moshe, the name that she chose for him, is because of what she did, of her sacrifice, of her, you know, you could just imagine, like, you know, the family fights about this. Here I am, I make this decree, and, you know, can you imagine what they're saying out in, you know, out in Alexandria? You know, my own, he makes a decree and his own daughter doesn't listen to him, you know.
But do we know that Paro knew that this was a Jewish child?
Hold on. Batomer la, wait a second, Batomer achoto, el bat paro, his sister, shows up. Oh, what do you know? All of a sudden I pull this, you know, this child out of the water, and all of a sudden this girl shows up. Hey, I noticed that you need some help. Right? Hailech bekarati lach isha meineket min ha'ivriyot. Would you like me to go find a wet nurse for this child? V'teinik lach et hayaled. This kid that you found, and he'll do it for you? Matomar labat paro lechi. Yes. I get the sense that there's
familiar.
Yeah. Something going on. You know what I'm saying? That obviously Bat Paro knew who Miriam was. I mean, could any Hebrew girl walk up to the daughter of Paro? You would think.
Which could be maybe why Chazal said that the male don't wear Yocheved and Miriam, because then Bat Paro would know who they are because they've been to the palace.
Right. This is not some anonymous. I get the sense that this family. Right, remember, it's not the slaves, I think, were very much integrated. Think about, like, slaves in the South, integrated into the family structures. There were slaves, obviously, building, but everybody had a slave. You know what I'm saying? So you lived in your slave house, and you served this family. So why would the pharaohs also not have slaves? So it could very well be that the families were associated in one way, and Bat Paro knew about what was going on. And she knew exactly what this was. So all of a sudden, lo and behold, Miriam shows up and says, well, would you like me to find someone to, you know, nurse this? I happen to know a woman who happens to be able to nurse. Gee, what a shock. Coincidence of coincidences. Yeah, go ahead and take care of it. You know, like they played on her compassion. Okay? I'll pay. Who does she bring back, obviously? Moshe's mother. Right, the actual mother. Okay, so she says, go bring back the child and I'll pay you. So now she gets to nurse her own child. Not only, and she's under the protection of the daughter of Paro, of the princess, and she's being paid to do it. That's her job.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, right, it worked out really well. Except, the child, obviously, how old would you think the child would have to be until he's weaned?
Three,
four, or whatever, who knows? Vativiehu lebat paro vayihilat levin. Okay, what did she call him, by the way? What was the child's name until now? Oh, he had a name. Let's hope. Hey, you know what I'm saying? I mean, okay. Vayihilat levin, vatikra shemo Moshe. She names this child Moshe. Vatomer, and she says, ki min hamayim mishitihu. Right, what is his name? drawn out of water, dense as with wolves. I mean, you know what I'm saying? The name had a meaning. What was the meaning of the name? What was the meaning of the... You asked me a question.
The child I saved.
The child I saved. From the water.
But he wasn't in the water.
What?
In the reeds.
Yeah, he was in the reeds in the water. Okay? She named him the child I saved from the water.
Which also means...
In Egyptian.
That his birth wasn't a secret to him.
Right? His birth wasn't a secret to him. But who also wasn't a secret to... Oh, you know, Bat Paro, I'd like you to meet my friend, you know, Nefertiti or whatever, okay? Hi, this is my son, the child I saved from the water. Oh, really? It's not just a name, like everything. It's not a name. Name's a statement, okay? Dad, right, go play catch with your grandson, child I saved from the water. You know what I'm saying? It was like, you know, that's his name. That's his name. Hey, child, I say, you know, can you imagine in school? You know, they send him to Egyptian, you know, finishing school. What's his name? Child saved from the water. It's not, you know, but he lives in the Pharaoh's house. Am I making too much of it?
No, I don't think you are at all, but I'm thinking about the privileged daughter of Paro. It was a rebellion against her father, but it was also like her goodwill project, I feel like. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, we don't know why she did it. One could say that she did it because she saw this as being immoral. You know, she saw it as being unacceptable. Who knows? Maybe she got into a fight with him one day and he wouldn't give her a cell phone and that's what she got back at it. I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the fact that she, you know, if she was scared of her father, if she was rebelling against him and scared of him, she wouldn't name him that name.
So right. She was taking a moral stand on the whole situation.
It's
so
interesting.
It was a moral stand. I wonder how much of it was like rebellion.
Look at what the Or HaChaim says.
How much of it is just...
See, it's so interesting. In our day and age, it's been great. In our day and age, our view of the nations of the world is such that I would say she was taking a moral stand against her father. What Or HaChaim says. Or HaChaim does not take that view at all. He says, why in the world did she save her? Okay? Davar ze hasechel yivcheruhu. Ki stam goya lo tirachem ela al b'nei umata. Says there's no way that any goya would save a Jewish child just because. She would only save an Egyptian child. Rather, v'agam she'anu ro'im she'achrei she'yada ki miyaldei ha'ivriyim u'chzika bo. Right? She did it. Why? She saved the child she knew was Jewish. Ein mizeh ra'ya ki achar she'yalda ma'alato gam she'ripei ota mitza'arat. There's a midrash that says that why did she go to the Nile? She had sarat. And as soon as she touched the child, she became in close proximity with the child, with Moshe, she was healed. So why did she save him? Because she knew it was a miracle child. You know what I'm saying? So you can take any perspective that you want. Why did she save him? Why did she fight? Oh, there's a special child. I have to save him. So I choose to think that she took a stand. But the Or HaChaim, when he lived and where he lived, what woman would take a stand to save a Jew? You know, it's interesting the way he said it.
He gets this vision that there's going to be a Jewish, maybe Egyptian child.
Right.
They're going to take him.
Right.
They kill all these children.
And then in his house.
And then they save a child. They know he's Jewish and bring him in the house.
It comes from the
despite
water. He knows it's coming.
This vision.
Correct. I mean, what is that like?
I would say, because it seems crazy that Paro would have led him to that. You'd have to assume that Paro thought he was born after.
Paro's reaction
before,
is
before,
it's
before.
Like you said, this is entirely the notion of what the Midrash says, that Paro has a certain vision and HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at him and says, not only will the salvation of the Jewish people come on that day from what I said, it will come from your house. You know, because we're gonna see in a second. Let me just, right? Let's read on. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayihi bayamim ha'hem. Vayigdal. How much time do I have? Like 5 minutes? 10 minutes? 5 minutes. Vayigdal Moshe vayetze el echav vayar b'sivotam. Moshe grows up, and where does he go out to? His brothers. Vayar. Okay, so it's interesting. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me echav. You have to highlight that. What is Moshe? How does he view himself as he grows up?
As different.
What is he? How does he view himself? It says clearly how he views himself. He views himself as?
Who's his brothers? The Egyptian brothers or the Jewish brothers?
Which one? I'm asking you. It says, Vayetse El Echav. He went out to his brothers. No, clearly, I think it's his perspective. I don't think the Torah's perspective. It's clearly his. He went out to his brothers. Right? The Jews are his brothers. And he saw their suffering. Think about growing up in the house of Paro, in the palace of Paro, raised as the grandson of the Pharaoh, but knowing, maybe being reminded of always, who knows, that you're a Hebrew. And you know, here you are, and like, who's bringing you your breakfast every morning? Who's cleaning, making your bed? Who's cleaning your toilets? Who's doing all the things that they're doing?
Jews.
No, the Egyptians don't do that. Right? And what are you? You're one of them. So remember we spoke about this idea, you mentioned this idea of, you know, growing up in an external outside, but not, you know, knowing that you're different, being raised as being different. So he goes out. What do you expect him to have? He has this sort of conflict. On the one hand, I'm raised by Egyptians. On the other hand, I have this identity. Okay? And he sees an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew. Vayifen ko vako vayar ki ein ish. He turns here, turns there. He sees no one there. You can look at the Midrashim if you want. Vayach et ha-mitzri vayitmaneu v'chol. He murders the Egyptian. It's almost like he kills the Egyptian. It's a very extreme reaction. You know, what could Moshe have done? Seeing an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew?
Stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, he is Prince of Egypt. We don't know if he had a good friendship with the, you know, whatever. And they had horse races. We don't know that, okay? What we do know is he's the Prince of Egypt. He could say, hey, cut it out. He could have him going to jail. Who knows? He kills him. Why?
Then he has to leave.
Okay. Anyone else? I don't know why.
It would be the culmination of all these years of being the...
Of having to watch, of having to see, of not knowing who you are.
Yeah.
She's so beautiful. Yeah, okay.
Or...
Right, it's hard to know, but it seems like, to me, it just seems like this sort of explosion, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like, he sees an Egyptian beating a Jew. How many times has he seen an Egyptian being a Jew?
It could be that he's not really considered the Prince of Egypt.
Okay. But he's protected.
Yes, but maybe if he said, don't do that. Like,
he lives in the house of the Pharaoh. You think so? They would laugh in his face.
Well, they call him Moshe. It's like a way
of... I don't know. Okay. Could be.
Why did it take him so long?
I don't know how long it took, but he finally... Whatever. He exploded. It's just very interesting.
Yeah, the child
might feel
a little threatened.
He went on the second day. Saying he sees two Hebrews. It's just interesting to know. What I want to show you is that the Chumash is pointing out Moshe's identity vis-a-vis the Egyptians. He sees an Egyptian and a Jew. Who does he side with?
The Jew.
Now he sees two Jews.
It says
two, okay, Ivrim Nitzim. He sees two Hebrews and he gets involved. You're going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? Vayira Moshe, and he got afraid. Vayomar echinu da'adavar. Right? He goes to the Jews, and he tries to intervene, and what do they say to him?
You're not one of us.
Who are you? Right. Who are you? What are you getting? You're going to kill me like you killed him? You killed the Egyptian, you can kill the Jew. Maybe the Egyptian in you is going to start killing Hebrews. So what does he do? Vayishma paro et hadavar hazeh, vayavakesh laharog et Moshe. Wants to kill him. Vayivrach Moshe bipnei paro, vayeshev be'eretz midyan, vayeshev al be'er. He runs away. Right? He wants to be a Jew. He wants to be an Egyptian. He can't be. He wants to be a Jew. He can't be. He is raised. He is born in such a way. Who were his parents? We don't know. We know, but we don't know their names. We're not told their names. What's his identity? His mother knows he's from a Hebrew. She gives him a name, but then she raises him in the house of the Pharaoh. Like, well, what are you? Yeah.
Did he know how to show his parents all these years?
Who knows?
I mean, if they were just saying that they had a relationship with Batia before,
he was born.
Yeah.
Could have
correct. I mean, is it like this unspoken relationship? It's so hard to know. I'm going to skip a little bit. I'm going to stop. I'm going to skip to. Moshe goes and he goes to Paro's house. Okay, right? He goes to Yitro's house. Just read the last pasuk. Skip to pasuk chaf bet. He marries Sipporah. Vayeled ben. She gives birth to a child, Vayikrat Shemo Gershom. Gershom. Ki amar, Ger Hayiti, Be'eretz Nochriya. I was a stranger in a strange land. What's the strange land? So most say that he was talking about his experience in Midian. I was a stranger in Midian, they accepted me.
In Egypt.
I was a stranger in Egypt. Moshe has finally found his place. Where does he finally find his place? Not in Egypt.
When he leaves.
Right. I can't be there. Why? Because when I go there, I'm neither this, I'm neither that. So I finally found a home. I finally found people who accept me. Why do they accept me? Because they don't care. Because I'm not Hebrew and I'm not Egyptian. I'm just belonging to Midian. The question we have to ask ourselves is, if Yad Hashem is so involved, we obviously believe this, Yad Hashem is so involved in the birth of Moshe, why was it so critical that Moshe be born as an outsider? And I think the answer is very clear. No one born into slavery can deliver the slaves from salvation. Because you're born into such a mentality. Like, you can't see yourself beyond the thing that you're born into. If you're a Hebrew and you're born as a slave and you're born into that, like, it's impossible for you to have this perspective of, we can be more than this, we should be more than this. So it had to be, in a sense, that the Jew, the person, and on the other hand, you have to be a Jew in order to deliver the Jewish people, because who would want to be delivered by an Egyptian? So you have to have this identity as being born a Jew, but you have to find this other external, you know what I'm saying, this ability to see beyond being a slave.
Also in South Africa with Mandela.
Oh, yeah.
He was crammed. No, but he was crammed from the time they were born because of his, like, he was the son of a king.
Really?
Ancestry. 100%. He was known that he would be there from the time.
And?
He was crammed.
And? He did. You know what I'm saying? But what we have to think about is this notion of, like, when I read this, I feel such pain for Moshe. You know what I'm saying? This, and you see it in the way he named his child. Like, when he got to Midian, his plan was, what was the plan for the rest of his life? I'm done. Mm-hmm. I am done. Right? And God comes to him and forces him to come back.
At age 80.
But just this notion of being outside, of being always an outsider, no matter what you say, no matter what you do, raised in that way, it was necessary in order to save the Jewish people. But the person who suffered for it was Moshe himself. All right, we'll stop here.